Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to BT's Q1 2019/20 trading statement conference call for the first quarter ended 30th of June 2019. My name's Joanne. I'm event coordinator for today. Throughout the presentation, you remain on listen only. If you need assistance at any time during the call, please key star zero on your phone and a coordinator will be pleased to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded today. I'll now hand you over to Mark.
Thanks, and welcome everyone. My name's Mark Smith from the BT Investor Relations team. Presenting on today's call is Philip Jansen, Chief Executive. Also on the call for Q&A are Simon Lowth, Chief Financial Officer, and members of our executive committee. Before we start, I'd like to draw your attention to the usual forward-looking statements on slide two and our latest annual report for examples of the factors which could cause actual results to differ from any forward-looking statements we may make. Both the slide and annual report can be found on our website. With that, I'll now hand over to Philip.
Thanks, Mark. Morning, everyone. Thanks very much for joining the call. As Mark said, I've got Simon with me, and I've got my whole team as well. So normal sort of program. I'll talk for sort of 10 minutes or so and then hopefully open up to questions that you may have. So when we announced our full year results in May, I underscored the need for BT to be bolder, smarter, and faster in order to ensure we remain successful and create a better BT for the future, while also delivering sustainable long-term value to our shareholders. We outlined the importance of improving our competitive position and driving further improvements in our efficiency and productivity. The first quarter of this financial year demonstrates that we're moving ahead in doing just that, and we will share a summary of our activities and performance over the quarter in a moment. But I first want to highlight some current key areas of focus on slide four. First, while we enjoy strong market positions, as I've said previously, we need to be even more competitive. We will continue to take decisive action to further strengthen our customer propositions and market position, both to respond to any short-term market pressures and to capitalize on the significant longer-term opportunities. We are working hard to strengthen the BT brand across every angle, including driving convergence-led propositions and further product innovation, delivering for customers and focusing on their loyalty, pursuing a step-change in customer service experience, and finally, ensuring we offer great value for money. Our sole focus is to drive sustainable long-term value for customers and shareholders. Our strategy is to retain and deliver greater value to our current customers and to attract new customers by providing differentiated converged connectivity products and services and great customer experience at the right price. In that context, we are prepared to compete decisively to retain our customers, including where necessary on price, with a value for money customer-led approach. We are already seeing the benefits of this focus. For example, we have had great success with converged products like BT Plus in consumer and 4G Assure in enterprise. These propositions give our customers better service while delivering value for money and maintaining a premium price. Our markets are competitive and our customers are demanding, so we won't stand still. In the coming months, you will see this approach develop further through our marketing and communications, and you can expect to see our propositions beginning to change in the autumn. Second, Openreach is getting on with the job of building FTTP to 4 million premises by March 2021, where it is commercially viable, and is so doing in many locations at speed, at low cost, and with attractive wholesale pricing. Looking further ahead, we've previously shared our strong determination to roll out fiber to 15 million premises by the mid-2020s. As I have said many times, BT is very keen to accelerate the pace of our FTTP rollout right across the U.K., but we will only do so if we are confident that the right enablers are in place so that we are able to generate a fair return on our investment for our shareholders. In recent weeks, we have shared with you our submissions to Ofcom's consultation about regulatory enablers, and we continue to have positive discussions. The current public discussion about accelerating national ambitions gives us the opportunity to reach an industry-wide solution that works for all stakeholders. We welcome the government's ambition for full fiber broadband across the country, and we are confident we will see further steps to stimulate investment. We at BT are ready to play our part to accelerate the pace of rollout in a manner that will benefit both the country and our shareholders. I will talk later about the context and the requirements to do so. And third, while our cost transformation program remains on track, we're evaluating the potential for further transformation through simplification of our product portfolio, systems architecture, and end-to-end processes to increase productivity and give us further capacity with which to deliver a step change in customer experience. So moving now to quarter one, let me start on slide five with the progress we've made against our core pillars during the quarter. First, our focus on delivering a differentiated customer experience continues to make our existing base happier, reflected by a 12th consecutive quarter of NPS improvement across all businesses. Our three retail divisions have continued to launch and market converged propositions, and our Openreach teams deserve special mention for recording the lowest ever quarter of missed appointments, alongside the best ever quarter, not only for copper and fibre repair, but also for offering 99.9% of customers a first appointment within 12 days. We committed to Ofcom's consumer fairness principles, and we were named the UK's major broadband universal service obligation provider by Ofcom so that we can extend our national role of helping customers access better broadband and mobile services. This will require BT to invest tens of millions of pounds into rural communities. Our unique ability to play such a systemically important role for the country is based on our second core pillar of having the best converged network, which is why we continue to invest in mobile and fixed access alongside our core. Openreach continues to roll out FTTP to around 20,000 premises per week while retaining an industry-leading focus on quality and cost. And our EE brand was first to offer UK consumers the exciting benefits of 5G. Our third core pillar is our focus on becoming a simplified, lean and agile business so that we can do more with less. Our cost transformation program remains on track, with about a further 750 roles removed during the quarter, and savings from the program currently running at an annualized benefit of about £1 billion, with an associated cost of £457 million. Our Better Workplace program will consolidate BT's footprint of more than 300 locations to around 30, containing modern, future-fit buildings, including corporate offices, contact centres, and specialist sites. It is the largest program of its type in the UK. During the quarter, we announced the first 9 locations across the country to benefit, and as a further symbol of change, we also announced the sale of BT Centre for £210 million and signed a lease on our new London headquarters in Aldgate. Turning to slide 6, our quarter one financial performance was in line with our expectations for the quarter, and we are on track to meet our outlook for the full year. As you know, this is the first quarter we are reporting under IFRS 16 accounting, so to make our commentary as helpful as possible, the trends I will describe use our unaudited pro forma financial information as the prior year comparator. Revenue fell 1%, due primarily to the ongoing headwinds from regulation and legacy product declines, and EBITDA was down 1% from the fall in revenue and higher spectrum fees and content care costs, partly offset by reduced costs from our restructuring and transformation programs. CapEx was up 11%, primarily due to network investment and customer-driven costs, while normalized free cash flow was down 36%, reflecting increased capital expenditure and higher interest and tax payments, partially offset by working capital phasing. Before I discuss each of our units, please remember that as well as IFRS 16, this is the first quarter we're reporting with the refined allocation of shared costs across our operating units and having transferred the emergency services network contract from consumer to enterprise, which are reflected in the prior year pro forma figures. Looking at our consumer unit on slide 7, revenue fell 1%, reflecting known headwinds from international calling and mobile spend cap regulation, which contributed to the EBITDA fall of 5%, alongside the unit's allocation of increased spectrum license fees and content costs. Maintaining a consistent customer base is a critical focus for Mark and his teams. We were therefore pleased that ongoing improvements to customer experience saw fixed churn fall to 1.3%, while mobile churn remained low at 1.1%. In May, our EE brand was the first to launch 5G in the UK, and we did so with a pricing premium to continue our more for more strategy with encouraging early results. In the same vein, we plan to launch 5G on our BT brand in the autumn. I'd also like to mention one of the first steps in our new BT brand and sponsorship strategy that reflects our commitment to making BT a true national champion. Alongside our existing sponsorship of Scottish Rugby, we recently signed a multi-year partnership with the FA to become the exclusive lead partner for all 28 England football teams. Through this, we will focus on connecting the nation with every level of the game, with an emphasis on grassroots support. Moving to enterprise, on slide 8, revenue fell 5% as prevailing headwinds continued. The fall was mainly driven by fixed voice as well as lower margin equipment sales. These challenges were partly offset by growth in IP and networking and in mobile despite the tough market conditions. Despite the headwind of lower revenue, EBITDA was only down 3% as our ongoing restructuring program led to lower labour costs. Our product launches during the quarter included two UK market firsts. In May, we launched the UK's first 5G services for businesses on our EE brand with new 5G plans, the broadest range of 5G devices and the 5G network going live in 6 cities, enabling our customers to benefit from the improved speed, capacity and latency of 5G. We've seen good early interest and take-up, particularly amongst SMEs. Shortly after, we launched new fibre and digital phone line bundles that are based on Openreach All IP Sigea capability. The bundles come with our new digital phone line so businesses can make and take calls on their business number from anywhere, our award-winning 4G Assure solution so the broadband connection never goes down, and all with a fixed price guarantee. Early signs have been very positive with the delivery of value for money and improved experience generating good demand. Separately, we sold the marketing and operation rights to 220 of our towers for the next 20 years to Cellnex, including an upfront cash payment of around £100 million. As previously stated, we're confident this is the right approach for these assets, and we believe that Cellnex will be best placed to grow the revenue streams over the coming years. In July, we extended our contract term with the Home Office for the Emergency Services Network from December 2021 to December 2024. Moving to global on slide 9. The 5% revenue decline reflected a continuation of existing trends driven by our strategic decision to reduce low-margin business, make non-core divestments and legacy portfolio declines, partially offset by growth in security. However, while EBITDA in the quarter benefited from certain one-offs, it was also the result of lower operating costs from the ongoing transformation and was up 18%. Global has continued to focus on its largest 800 accounts and on expanding its portfolio of cloud security and software-defined network solutions. As part of our push to invest in selected areas of growth, our security business thrives on customers looking to BT as their trusted partner, so we opened a new cybersecurity operations center in Paris during the quarter and upgraded facilities at our existing centers in Madrid and Frankfurt. If you've not already done so, then I'd encourage you to take a look at Global's new revenue disclosure within the KPIs document we publish. The changes reflect its simplified commercial structure and aid a better understanding of the underlying drivers of business performance. Finally, looking at Openreach on slide 10, 1% revenue growth was driven by higher fibre and Ethernet volumes, partly offset by price reductions and higher credits for auto compensation. EBITDA was flat compared to last year as revenue growth and some one-off items were offset by higher operating costs. These were mainly the result of higher business rates and higher salary costs from pay inflation as we invest in more colleagues to deliver better service. Efficiency savings did, however, provide a partial offset. Openreach continues to be the largest infrastructure provider, rolling out FTTP at pace and scale, again adding about 20,000 premises per week to what is already the UK's largest FTTP network, and at the lower end of the £300 to £400 per premises pass range, at which Openreach believes it could cover 50% of the UK. In contrast, the costliest 10% of premises are expected to require an outlay of around £4,000 each to pass. Earlier this week, Openreach announced 36 new locations where it will build FTTP over the next 12 months, and we expect to exit this financial year at a run rate of around 30,000 premises passed per week. This followed an announcement that it will reduce FTTP wholesale prices to encourage communication providers to upgrade their customers and attract new ones onto the network that's being rolled out. Looking further ahead, we continue to lay the groundwork to help the government achieve its target of FTTP across the entire UK. One critical enabler of a large-scale network will be a quick, efficient way to switch over end customers from the existing copper network. Having spent a few months speaking to communications providers about how it can best support their customers in the big upgrade process, Openreach recently proposed Salisbury and Mildenhall as two key trial locations for its national upgrade program. Work continues apace, and we welcomed Ofcom's proposed changes in regulation to support the early stages of the planned full fibre migration trial in Salisbury. Staying with the development of our access networks on slide 11, as I touched upon earlier, the recently renewed public debate about accelerating national FTTP ambitions gives us the opportunity to reach an industry-wide solution that works for all stakeholders. This will enable us and others to support a major step change in the UK's digital infrastructure over the next few years. As I said before, we're very keen to accelerate our FTTP rollout, but we'll only do so if we are confident that the right enablers are in place so that we are able to generate a fair return. We welcome Ofcom's recent statements and agree with many aspects of its remedy proposals, so that we can make the investment decisions necessary to meet heightened expectations for both full fibre and 5G availability. There are several elements of the current policy framework that need to be in place as soon as possible to meet our shared ambitions. To get the digital infrastructure the UK needs in a timely way, decisive action from government, Ofcom and industry will be required. There needs to be a determined acceleration towards a pro-investment policy and regulatory regime. This requires the following enablers for the whole of the UK. A government-led campaign, like that for digital TV, to facilitate a complete switchover at real pace from old copper technology to the benefits of fibre. This could and should be done in a way that enables recovery of stranded copper costs across the country. Next, a genuinely level playing field that enables competition between infrastructure providers to benefit customers. This includes allowing Openreach to meet the competition that it faces, for example, from other network providers, with its pricing to deliver benefits to downstream CPs and ultimately to customers. Next, clarity about how regulation will enable investors in fibre infrastructure to make a fair return on our investment, i.e. on the terms of the fair bet. This is, of course, hugely important to us, but matters for all other players too, as it provides some clarity on the environment within which they will operate. And finally, and very importantly, a redoubling of efforts on barrier busting, so that it is quick and easy and efficient for fibre providers to extend their footprints. As well as political decisions on business rates and planning policy, granting us the same access rights as the power and water industries would make a material difference and reflect the importance of digital infrastructure to our economy and society. Alongside these enablers across the country, public funding will probably be needed to bring FTTP to the hardest to reach 10% of the UK population and address enduring mobile hotspots. It is crucial that this public funding that is used as efficiently and effectively as possible without undue bureaucracy and duplication to make sure that the UK gets the maximum digital bang for its buck. We agree that full fibre can be the platform for the UK's future prosperity, and we're determined to lead the way. No company is doing more. Peers at all levels of government, Ofcom and BT continue to work on a more detailed analysis of all the options and possibilities, but we wanted to take this opportunity to reiterate our positive intent. The government has made clear the size of its ambition for full fibre broadband for the country, and we are confident it will now take further steps to stimulate investment. That would allow us to play our part and accelerate the pace of FTTP build right across the UK. Our focus is on making BT a better business in the long term, fulfilling our role as a national champion and delivering sustainable long-term value to all stakeholders. But rest assured, as I've said many times before, top of our mind is ensuring that investors who provide the capital earn an adequate risk-adjusted return on the decisions we take. So, to summarise on slide 12, we've delivered results in line with our expectations for the first quarter. We are confident about the plans we have in place and are executing them well, so we confirm that we are on track to meet our outlook for the full year. We enjoy strong positions in our consumer and enterprise markets and are prepared to take action to maintain our customer bases. While the main thrust of this approach is to focus on converged connectivity and services to ensure the loyalty of customers across our businesses, it could also include further pricing actions, having already introduced fairer and more predictable policies. This value for money, customer-led approach, and our strong determination to roll out fibre are further demonstrations of how we can be bolder, smarter, and faster to really ensure that we remain successful and create a better BT for the future. I'm really excited about the long-term prospects of this great company, so thank you for engaging with us today, and we look forward to answering your questions. So, operator, could we please open the lines?
Thank you. So if anyone would like to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. And your first question comes from Carl Murdock-Smith from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I was just wondering if you could provide a bit more colour on how the talks with government have changed in recent weeks since Boris Johnson has become Prime Minister, and in terms of how that has impacted your own thinking when thinking about full fibre rollout. Specifically, on the kind of enablers that you talk about, one of the key ones that you've been consistent on is wanting a longer business rates holiday for fibre, from 5 years to 20 years. You've already successfully persuaded Scotland to increase it to 10 years. I was just wondering how optimistic you are with the new regime that you might be able to negotiate that increase. And then secondly, I just wanted to ask on the Sky Sports wholesale deal. The wholesale deal was meant to start in early 2019. It then got pushed back to mid-2019. We're now sat here with the Premier League season kicking off a week today. I was just wondering if you could provide us with an update on why it's been delayed, when we can expect it, and also what that means financially, given the fact that I would have assumed you'd have given it a fairly hard commercial launch had you got it launched before the football season. Thanks.
Sure, Carl. Thanks very much. So I'll do the fibre plan with a new sort of Prime Minister and sort of new focus on that. Then maybe I'll get Mark to talk about the TV stuff. Well, a couple of things. Firstly, you know, I think it's fantastic that fibre rollout is now being fully recognised as a national mission, and we think it would be possible to massively step change the fibre build if the government and Ofcom take decisive action and the industry collaborate effectively. There is no question, and you can see it in the all the communications from Boris Johnson himself, but also his advisors and his team members, that digital connectivity, digital infrastructure is a key part of what they want to deliver. So I think, you know, it's we're in discussions with them and Ofcom. The industry is talking together to try and find a way forward. I think I've been hopefully reasonably clear on the kind of things that we need as an industry to make a big difference. I mean, just to give you some sense, I'm sure you know these numbers, but Carl, but you know, we're talking about a more than £30 billion worth of investment to get full fibre to everybody. You know, there are 32 million homes, and actually the other 30 is we probably need as an industry about 35,000 people to build this network over the next 5 years or so, if that's what we end up trying to do. You know, BT, Openreach specifically, has 5,000 people doing that. We're ready to train, recruit, reprioritise our skilled labour into places that would help us build at a pace that would meet Boris Johnson's ambition for a huge step change by 2025. The other thing I'd say, and these things are really important, in addition to the neighbours, which are sort of almost there, but we just need a decision on it, this switchover campaign, like digital TV, to move from analogue to digital TV, it's the same for move from copper to fibre, making it a national campaign, the national mission, and the huge bill would be really helpful. But don't underestimate the importance of some of the requirements to change access and way leaves and the ability to make these connections as quickly as possible and as efficient as possible in the lowest cost possible, because everybody benefits from that. And the point I was making about power and water, for example, is they basically can do things much quicker than we can for reasons that are historical. But what we're arguing for is, if we're going to build at this level, we need some real changes, and one of them should be prioritizing everybody getting behind a digital infrastructure bill that is going to have huge benefits for consumers, customers, and ultimately the whole country. The other final thing I should just say, Simon just passed me a little note, that very important, cumulo rates. I mean, the irony is, of course, we're getting taxed, as other people are as well, all the industry, on building fibre. It's a bit of a nonsense. So that kind of thing needs to be changed as well in the overall scheme of things. Simon, anything to add on the ambition for fibre?
No, I think covered it well. Yeah, thank you.
Mark Allier is going to talk about the football.
Yeah, just a few lines on that question. I think it's a good question, Carl. The first thing I'd say is that this is a very long-term deal between ourselves and Sky, so this is not a deal for a couple of quarters. And both brands are really focused on making sure that the customer experience is the best it can possibly be before we launch. And for us, it's quite a complex integration into our TV service, because there are a number of services and features that we're really excited about giving our customers that have taken us a little bit longer than we've liked. But in terms of impact on the financials, no material impact. We're just focused on getting the customer experience right. Expect to see it before the end of the year.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Carl. Is that right, Carl?
Yep, that's brilliant. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Just two questions, please. Firstly, picking up on the fibre run rate question, you're running at about just over a million, and I think Clive had mentioned in the past that you could get to maybe 2.5-3 million. So it's very clear that the political ambition has changed, but what I'm keen to understand is whether your thinking of the run rate annually achievable has changed, and clearly that might play into the prior question around engineers as well, but any extra colour would be great. And then secondly, just picking up on the slightly weaker consumer fixed line trends, it looks like the market was quite a bit softer in the second quarter and also limited ARPU growth. But I was just wondering whether you can see the market picking up and also your view on pricing as we go into the second half of the year. Thanks very much.
Michael, thanks for the question. Look, Michael, I'll make a couple of comments on fibre and then ask Clive to add his perspective. And then on the weaker consumer stuff, I think maybe Simon can give a sort of comment on the results, and then maybe Mark, just in terms of the general market trends and what we're seeing out there and how we're dealing with it. Is that okay? I mean, on the fibre run rate, I mean, you're dead right, by the way. We're building it sort of this year, exiting at the 30,000 rate per week. So that's 50% higher than we're doing today. So that steps that up. You are right that our original thinking is in the 2.5 to 3 million. We are looking now, can we get past that? And what is the, if things, given the ambition seems to have changed, and if that is real, then we need to respond to that and ask a different question is, if that's a target that the country's really going to go for, and everyone's going to get squarely behind it, it suddenly means that we can have to look at things in a different way. So we've got many, many people who will work at BT. I'd be open-minded about reprioritizing. Openreach needs to hire more people, reskill, all the things you could imagine we are looking at now. Assuming we get the enablers and assuming that the decisive action I referred to before happens from Ofcom and government, I'm sure Clive will find a way of building at a rate which surprises everybody. Clive, do you want to make a comment? He's laughing, by the way, of course, as I say that.
Yeah. Hysterically. So, look, it's a highly labour-intensive endeavour to build full fibre for the homes and businesses of the UK. Over last year and this, we will have hired about 6,000 new people. We will have built 12 fibre training centres in every major area of the UK. So we are building a scale resource capability, and we are building a training and skilling capability that will make those people very effective. We continue to innovate on the componentry and the build processes for fibre to the premise. The combination of these factors gives us confidence that we could achieve a very significant uptick in our build run rate. So we are confident in the 4 million number by March 21. And we think we can continue to accelerate the annual rate of build thereafter.
Brilliant. Thank you. Sam, you want to comment on the numbers on consumer?
Yeah, I mean, why don't I'll just summarise at the overall level, and then I'm sure Mark can pick up some of the more detail in trading. I mean, at the overall level, I think as you saw, revenue was down about 20 million. Actually, if you strip out some of the regulatory impacts in the quarter. So we had international calling, obviously, and then the mobile spend cap regulation. We actually were pretty transparent in our release that if you strip that out, actually revenue was flat. There were some puts and takes within that. So we did see some pressure in the fixed side. I'm sure Mark will pick that up, but equally good performance in TV and sport, for example. If we go down to the EBITDA line, saw the revenue flow through, but also, I think, again, we called out in the release a increase in spectrum licenses. You'll all understand and know about that, and a bit of a tick up in content costs. So that's at the high level trends. Mark, do you want to pick up on the trading?
Yeah, hi, Michael. Just on the fixed side, the thing I think we've been pretty clear on is that we are overhauling the model for the BT brand in terms of propositions, pricing, service innovation. So I think it's important to remember we are now lapping a price rise that we put in Jan 18, and of course with our new move to CPI-based pricing, there's no price rise this year, but then the customers that will be on CPI contracts will be getting a price rise in line with CPI next year. So that's a pretty material change in the hydraulics in the customer base, which you know, did drive previously low levels of satisfaction and spikes in churn when we did the price rises. So we're moving to a much more sustainable model, which is the right thing to do. But of course, that makes the top line comparators much harder this year as we've got no price rise. The thing I am pleased about, though, with my team's focus on customer loyalty and churn and improving service, we've seen fixed line churn reduce again to 1.3%, and I look at a number of lead indicators that are telling me that our customers are getting happier, more satisfied with the service. We've seen the recent Ofcom complaints on the BT brand, with BT brand hitting new lows in terms of record lows of complaints, and those trends look set to continue. So I'm pleased with the way the turnaround is progressing. More work to do. And a lot of investment coming through in our numbers that we've talked about, the acceleration of call centres all of the way back to the UK and Ireland, and we're bringing that forward. That was originally planned for Christmas 20. That we're bringing that forward to as close to Christmas 19 as we can. Migrating more customers from copper to fibre, investing in preparing our retail stores to be able to sell and serve to BT customers. And of course, innovating, the key thing we've got to do is keep the innovation up on the convergence side, and we're launching the next chapter of BT Plus in the coming weeks, which we're very excited about. It's got some new features there on product innovation, network innovation, and service innovation. You'll hear more on that in the autumn.
Great, thanks. Michael, just wouldn't mind Jerry just making a comment on enterprise. It's a similar situation in terms of some really interesting competitive dynamics on mobile and various other places, but I think we're doing well in it. Jerry, do you want to just give a perspective on that?
There's a number of different dynamics going on in there. I think in terms of, everyone knows the sort of headwinds that we face.
I think what we've tried to do over the last 6 months is make sure that we're, in going into the market, are trading strong, we've got the right products. What you saw in the quarter was the launch of 5G, the launch of software-defined network solutions, and also at the very end of the quarter, we launched the first Sugia product to the SME market, which is integrating digital voice and fibre. And the take-up of those have been very strong, actually, so far, both in terms of volume and in terms of the price points that we're getting there. So I think trading, you'll see the trading numbers, I think they're pretty good. I think that we can do more with the products that we're bringing in, and hopefully actually that gives us a bit of strength in the market. Where we're seeing the challenge in terms of, you know, similar to Mark talking about broadband there, our acquisition's good at good value. We've still got to address the copper base, which we have plans to do, because that's the soft underbelly there. Probably the most important dynamic we're seeing in the market at the moment is around the larger businesses, where mobile is very aggressively priced at the moment. You see on net ads are reasonable. They're reasonable. We are fighting that market. We really do have our issues to lose there, and we're going to step that up, but also really focusing on how we can shift our positions to tax to attack some of the, you know, very aggressive pricing we're seeing in that market. We're keeping our head above water on it, but it is a very aggressive position at the moment.
Great, thanks, Joe. Is that okay, Michael?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. So your next question comes from Sam McHugh from Exane. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. A couple of questions, please. I think churn in consumer is actually up year on year. I know it's down sequentially, but it's kind of very seasonal, obviously, which presumably means the non-BT Plus customers' churn must be picking up quite a lot. And then generally, if I look at the fixed consumer KPIs in the broadband growth and Openreach, momentum does seem to be slowing a lot, and you've talked about investing in price. But I kind of wondered how you think about allocating budget towards Mark and investing in price versus allocating money to CapEx for Clive, and how you balance those two things off against each other. And then just on the fibre, the 300 to 400 million per home passed, I just wanted to clarify, where does this actually get you? Does it get you to the street outside the home, to the front of the house? Does it include the in-home wiring and the equipment in the house? Just a bit more detail on kind of the cost breakdown of fibre would be super helpful. Thanks very much.
Okay. I'll get Mark to talk about the specifics on churn. I think Simon will give you a perspective on how we go through our sort of budgeting and prioritisation on CapEx versus propositions and pricing stuff, and I'll obviously add in a chip in that. And then on the fibre point, I mean, Clive, do you want to do that first, because it's pretty straightforward?
Yep. Okay, so what we're saying and what Philip has said to you is that we think we can build a large portion of the country at between £300 and £400. What does that mean? It means building to what we term a distribution point. So, you know, in the suburbs of the UK, a distribution point might be at the top of a pole or a box under the pavement. And from that distribution point, we serve perhaps 20, maybe 25 homes. So the build costs are all the way from the distribution point back to the exchange, back to the fibre head end in the exchange. So we talk about that as the build cost, and then we talk separately about a provision cost. So when a customer orders an FTTP-based service, imagine the pole in the street in suburbia, an engineer comes along, attaches, and it's connectorized technology, there's no splice, attaches a fibre cable to the block at the top of the pole, draws it across to the home, which might be, you know, 20, 30 metres away, attaches it into the eaves of the house, pulls it down the house front, drills through the wall, and puts an ONT, which is a small white box with some optoelectronics on, that terminates the fibre service, runs a test, and that's the provision job done. So that's what build is, and that's what provision is.
Great, thanks, Clive. Mark, do you want to do churn?
Yeah, I mean, the market is, I would say, significantly more aggressive and competitive this year versus last year, so I think that the comparisons are not entirely like-for-like, and the focus really for us has been improving every quarter, customer satisfaction, improving churn. which we are seeing, and the lead indicators on that are improving every day. So I'm pleased with the progress we're making in a very competitive market. Getting churn down whilst the aggression on pricing is going up, I think, is a relative success for us. And you're right to say the converged customers do churn lower, and they do have higher levels of satisfaction and higher levels of engagement in the BT brand, and that's why that's such an important focus for us, getting as many customers as possible on BT Plus and enjoying the benefits of converged broadband and mobile and content services.
Great.
Do you mind if I ask a very quick follow-up?
I was going to talk about how we allocate decisions, budgets on capital and pricing and propositions. Do you want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, so you asked about sort of the trade-offs between the decisions we take in investment in our network versus those we take in our retail businesses. These two decisions are somewhat linked, but we do think about these as two quite different types of investment. I mean, let me start firstly in network investment. These are long-term, longer payback investments, building high-quality assets that generate return over multiple years. We have a clear plan to do that. We have allocated the CapEx. As Philip described earlier, if we see that there is potential to extend that rollout and that investment for high-quality returns to reflect the risk, that is a decision we will take, and we will consider the optimal long-term funding to do that. Moving then to investments in the retail businesses, these are more concentrated in our IT and in OPEX investments. To some extent, that is constrained by the total capacity for us to generate IT change through a year. And we allocate that capacity to individual projects into the retail units based essentially on the quality of payback and the speed of payback, and that tends to be over a 1 to 2 to 3 year period max. That's how we go about the process. But I think, as you'll have understood, we have prioritized investment in our product competitiveness in our service. Mark described some of those because we are confident that that's going to pay back in terms of better trading performance, you know, next year and beyond.
Sam, is that okay with that?
Yeah, super good. I was just going to ask on the provisioning and how expensive. I guess provisioning is quite different by home. Do you have a rough estimate of kind of provisioning CapEx costs on fibre to the home?
We do. We have an estimate. Are we sharing that number?
Well, I mean, Clive, in terms of provisioning on FTTP, what we've described as the initial Towns and Cities programme, you want to comment on that, Clive?
Yeah, so we know a lot more about the build cost right now because we've built to 1.5 million homes at the end of quarter one. The provisioning number at the end of quarter one is about 350,000. So, and those provisions were not a good reflection of the provisions going forward. So going forward, we're building an awful lot of fibre in urban areas and suburban areas where the drop cable lengths are much shorter. So it's very early in the process to talk with confidence about the provisioning cost at this stage. We are working on processes for provisioning, looking at the componentry that we use, and it's the subject of a lot of optimisation now
The only thing to add, I guess, Clive, is that some of the enablers we discussed earlier about accelerated and coordinated approaches to switch over will help on provisioning because you can tackle that in a much more organised fashion. So that's part of the...
Yeah, so what Simon's referring to is that today we take, orders one at a time, so they're in random places across a 1.5 million footprint. What we see in the future is a more organised approach to moving the country from copper to fibre. So we would roll down a road, moving all or many of the houses all in one go, and that will dramatically impact the provisioning cost.
So Sam, it's a really good question. I think you get the message of what we're doing here. We've got a core plan, we've got some ambitions. Those are being relooked at with the changing political landscape. Clearly, by definition, this program's not without its risks. The risks go up if you accelerate the build significantly, because remember, I'm not willing to build faster at a lower quality and a higher cost per home passed. So we're working very hard to try and understand the vagaries of the detail across
multiple households in different places with all different characteristics, as you can imagine. So what Clive's referring to is loads of examples of testing and trying to understand what are those characteristics and how could we manage them better. The example Clive gave needs a lot of thought and care and collaboration such that we are building in the most efficient way and connecting people. So by definition, if you're provisioning people, you know, in a disorganized fashion where they're not in any way coordinated, that's going to raise the cost considerably, as opposed to a massive digital switchover equivalent for TV, copper to fiber, is going to bring the cost down for everybody. And that's what we're trying to find a way of doing.
Super clear, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Akhil Vitani from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Morning. Just a couple of questions, please. A couple of clarifications and a couple of new points. So first, in terms of clarifications, I guess, on fixed line KPIs, Philip, you've talked about the importance of stabilizing the customer base, and obviously churn and NPS scores are improving. But I guess you don't report net adds, but if we back them out, it looks like net adds have probably deteriorated this quarter. You've talked about competition being a bit sterner, but I guess could you just talk us through what you're seeing happening? Obviously, it's very early days in terms of your intentions to improve things, but you know, what are your plans? How long do you think it takes? And am I right that trends have got a bit worse here? The second one is just a clarification on mobile ARPU trends. Your mobile ARPU declined 4.5% this quarter. You've talked about regulatory drags, and you've talked about a lower RPI tailwind than the prior year. But I guess if I look at your peer numbers, we don't seem to see the similar trend change. So any sort of color around that would be useful as well. And then I guess the new point was just you talked about the tower deal you've done with Cellnex. Now, if I understand, that's 220 towers, but I believe you have 3,000 towers outside of your network JV. So you do have further towers you could potentially transact with. So could you just help us understand why you chose that number? I presume you're trying to learn about how the process works. Clearly, tower deals have become very topical lately, and we've seen what Vodafone did the other week. So I guess just keen to understand, firstly, could this be a move towards doing more? How do you think about that? And I guess the second bit to that is that would you ever consider selling a stake in your network JV? Vodafone and O2 have talked about doing that. Would that be something that'd be interesting in terms of monetization? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, look, I'll do the first one, and I'll ask Mark to talk about mobile ARPU trends, and Simon can give you an update on why we did the Cellnex deal and sort of answer your follow-up question on that. I mean, Akhil, your analysis is correct. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we are in the broadband fixed market. The pricing pressures have increased dramatically. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're doing the right thing in that particular market, and focusing on our existing customers and protecting our base is crucial, as well as attracting new customers, particularly into the kind of propositions that Mark talked about, you know, the plus converged type area where prices, frankly, are premium, NPS is extremely high, and churn is extremely low. So, you know, our sole focus is to drive sustainable long-term value for our customers and our shareholders by definition, and we need to find ways where our customers are willing to pay more for more. And so that hasn't changed. What we're saying is the market, you know, at the sort of price-conscious end is changing, and what we're seeing is, you know, many people sort of trying to attract customers with a sort of promise of better things in the future, and those things sort of don't seem to deliver. And so whilst we believe our propositions deliver great value for money, you know, and it's a better service, best network quality, if it continues to be the case where pricing becomes too dominant a factor, we will have to react to that to make sure that the numbers you're referring to on our churn and KPIs don't dip against us. So do not anticipate BT fixed losing market share anymore. On mobile ARPU.
Yep, I can talk to that, Akhil. So we had a number of headwinds that we've talked to some of them today. So the first was an RPI last year was 4%, this year 2.7%. So that was a one headwind against us. We continue to see more and more customers migrating to SIM only, so that does dilute the postpay ARPU. And we've had two quite material impacts in terms of regulation this year, the spend caps introduction and the EU IDD. So they've all hit the mobile ARPU line. We've kept churn at 1.1% in a pretty aggressive market. And on the fixed side, just to reiterate some of the points that Philip's made there, we are overhauling the whole model for BT on the service and pricing, value for money and innovation side. That's not something that can be fixed in a quarter, but the lead indicators that we're seeing on lower churn quarter on quarter, improved satisfaction, lower complaints, that's a very solid base for us to build from. And then we've got to improve competitiveness and value for money and innovation on the proposition side, and you'll see more from us in terms of launches in the autumn, in terms of what we're doing there.
Yeah, Akhil, just one other thing to add before I ask Simon to talk about Telnex. You know, the 5G market, which is just starting, is an interesting example of what I'm driving at. You know, we believe that, you know, we want to do a great job on 5G for our customers. The benefits are obvious. We want to extend our coverage and invest in the network as best we possibly can, as quickly as possible. And therefore, the pricing returns, cash flow has to make that work. We launched with a premium price for 5G, about £5 per month, and it looks as though the market may not be able to sustain that premium because it looks like other people aren't in the same position as we are. And that was my point about trying to attract our customers. We are the market leader. We know we have the best network. We think we have the best products. We're going to do everything to make sure we maintain that leadership. And what I'm getting at is, if need be, we have to be a bit sharper on pricing in certain cases. We'll have to do that. But our focus hasn't changed, which is delivering outstanding converged connectivity with great products, with very much improving service, and very much at the premium end of the market.
Okay. So, firstly, on the Cellnex deal, this was quite specific around a small portfolio of high towers. Those towers generate some additional revenue streams today. We entered into an agreement with Cellnex whereby we essentially sold to them the market rights. They see opportunity to generate additional revenue. It is an unambiguous focus for them. It's not a core activity for us, and therefore there's value upside for both parties. So a very clear deal there about generating additional value from further use on a very specific portfolio. Turn to our wider towers portfolios, you know, all in the UK, vast majority are within MVNL and therefore already shared, and indeed further demands on the sharing of those sites as we move from 4G to 5G and looking to deliver, you know, even high quality, high performance coverage from them. You're right, there are some, you know, actual sites that within BT. Do bear in mind some of those actually are owned by other cell owners, and therefore opportunities is not as significant as you might have thought. But clearly, if we do see an opportunity for additional value generation through a combination of greater revenue share, potentially a financing opportunity, and we see that as outweighing the strategic benefit of tight control for us, you know, those are decisions we'd look at the right point and at the right time and you know, do on a pretty regular basis.
Akhil, is that all right?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks a lot.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Polo Tang from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've just got three quick questions. The first one's on consumer. You've obviously outlined a very competitive environment in terms of both fixed and mobile, but can you give us some colour in terms of which operators have been the most aggressive in your view? Second question is just a quick one in terms of Openreach. So within your FTTC subscriber base, can you give a rough sense of what the mix is between the different speed tiers? So what percentage are on the 40 megabit per second product, the 55 megabit and 80 megabit product? And can you also talk about the mix of speed tiers in terms of the FTTC gross adds? And my third question is really just around Huawei. Have you had any indication from the new government on how they're thinking about the Huawei situation? So will you have to swap out existing Huawei equipment, and how how should we think about the potential quantum in terms of costs? Thanks.
Sure. Paolo, look, I'll get Mark to talk about consumer marketing. And, you know, it's difficult for us to talk about other people in detail because we only know what we're doing. We can see how the market operates. But Mark can give you a little bit more colour on the kind of thing that we see in the marketplace that we need to react to. And I'll get Clive to comment on the speed tiers and the take-up and how we're doing it. I'm not so sure we can answer the gross ads on FTTC, can we? I mean, we probably know. And then I'll do the Huawei question. That's the Huawei question, if that's okay. So, Mark, do you want to just give a little bit more colour on what you're seeing in the market?
Yeah, I won't pick out any particular names, but just to give some context, I mean, on the 40-10, 80-20 products, we've seen the market price for those products reduce between £5 and £9 per month. So that's been an average price dilution at a retail level on broadband. On the mobile side, there is an offer in the market right now of unlimited data for £10 a month for the first 6 months. And we've seen 5G, as Philip outlined, whilst we thought it was logical that with all the investment going into 5G and the fact it's a faster, better network, we thought it would be logical to have a small premium for that service. Others haven't seen that logic. So that's been another dynamic that's happened in the last few weeks. That's just a bit of flavour of some of the competitive headwinds that are going on.
Yeah, and I'd add, Paolo, I'm sure you've heard the joke before, but, you know, it's like if you look at the value for money we're offering, this connectivity, broadband connectivity is hugely important to everybody, as I'm sure you well know, and that's why if things don't go well, we get called very, very quickly. So we know how important it is to people, but you can get a great product for £25-30 a month, and the sort of standard industry joke is that sort of like 10-12 coffees a month. So what we're saying is we know we provide great value for money. We're investing heavily to make sure those things keep moving, and therefore we can get ready for future speed requirements that we all know will change over the next decade or so, right? So whilst the demand at scale isn't there yet for very, very high speeds, it definitely will be there. We don't know exactly when, so we've got to build a network on that basis. So it's all linked as ever. So we just need to make sure that the market operates in the most balanced way, and we have obviously a big responsibility to lead that in the right way and get the cash flows into the business that can be reinvested into, as an example, the massive build on fixed fibre network, but also the 5G network I referred to earlier. So, I mean, on the tiering, Clive, do you want to make a comment on that?
Yeah, so it's progressing very nicely, actually. So I'm very pleased that the proportion of customers taking the higher tier products on VDSL, the fibre to the cabinet platform, is significantly up from this time last year. We're sort of reaching the cutover point where half of the customers now are taking higher speed VDSL products rather than the anchor 4010 product. So we see the mix improving year on year and by a decent proportion. And of course the aim then is to move customers from super fast tiers to ultra fast tiers as more and more customers move to the new fibre to the premise and GFast platforms.
Great. On Huawei, I mean, again, obviously it's a complex issue, right? And again, as you know, it's right that the time is taken to work out exactly what the way forward should be. Things haven't changed at all, really, which is, all the stuff and we've said many times before, is security is such an important part of what we do for our customers and for the country at large. We are in detailed, ongoing dialogue with NCST, the government, and all stakeholders. I think we have a clear policy of not using Huawei in the core, as you know. That will be maintained. And, there is this... The decision has been deferred as people look at the more complex elements to the Huawei decision that I referred to earlier on. So, all I can tell you is the good news is people are being calm, considered,
and we welcome that fact-based approach to get the right decision, and as long as it takes. So at the moment we're carrying on with our plan, which is using them in the outer part of the network in mobile, the RAN, and not in the core, and we're very much balancing our suppliers. They are by no means our only supplier. And you know, for example, we got very fast adoption of Nokia now in FTTP, and you know, Huawei will, if there's no direct complete ban, for example, Huawei will be a supplier to us, but they will not by any way be the only supplier, and will have multiple suppliers, which we currently do today as well.
But how difficult is it to do a swap out of Huawei equipment? Is it something that is very, very complicated and very
Say that again. How complicated?
How complicated would it be to do a swap out of Huawei equipment if you had to go to that extent? And could you give us an idea in terms of quantum of costs?
Yeah, I mean, Paolo, to be clear, if there was a complete ban on Huawei, that is a massive decision in terms of the implications thereof. It would take, if that were the case, that would take years to execute. So and therefore, the cost implications depend on how many years. But I mean, you would not physically be able to do it in under 5 years. So and that's why we say why it's a complicated issue. So whatever happens, under all circumstances, and this applies to most countries in Europe, Huawei will be in the network in some shape or form for many years in the foreseeable future. The question is, under what circumstances and what exactly should we do? And that's why, again, I can only tell you that the discussions I'm having and we're having as a team with the government and the cybersecurity experts and all the stakeholders is very sensible.
Thanks.
Thank you. So your next question comes from Paul Sidney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning. Just three quick questions, please, for me. Firstly, on the full fibre investment, you mentioned that borrowing, CapEx, and dividend are potential sources of funding. But would you also consider cutting sports rights, content costs as well? I mean, a huge amount in the presentation about fibre, but almost nothing about content. Just wondering how you're thinking about that. And secondly, Ofcom has been making some recent public comments about giving good visibility over two regulatory cycles, which potentially could give you good visibility out to 2031. I was just wondering, in the context of the fair bet, is that period of time long enough? And then just a quick third one. Are you still targeting higher EBITDA in March 21 versus March 20? Thank you.
Okay. Well, let me do the last one first, and I'll get Catherine to do Ofcom, regulatory cycles, and fair bet. On EBITDA, of course we are. We're definitely targeting doing that. And in terms of the full fibre versus content, the answer is simply no. You know, we have a proposition in consumer which is multifaceted, and an important part of that today is the BT Sport offering, which is extremely compelling, and we're making very good progress on amending it so it continues to prosper both for our consumers but also from a financial point of view. Let me ask Catherine to make a couple of comments on the question around Ofcom and the regulatory cycle.
Hi, Paul. Yes, you're quite right. Ofcom has talked about forbearing from regulating fibre prices beyond the anchor price for two control periods, which would give us some welcome certainty until 2031. But of course, as you know, there's more to it than that. And I think we are in discussion with Ofcom about some principles that we hope will endure beyond the 2021 review, possibly even beyond the 2026 review, because as we all know, investment in fibre is a long-term investment with long payback periods. So two control periods of regulatory forbearance is great, but we do need to get clarity from them on those enduring principles as well.
Thanks, Paul. Simon just said to me he doesn't think I answered the question very well on full fibre versus sport, so let him have a go.
It wasn't the quality, it was bad. It was omitted. I think the question was, do we think about not investing in sport in order to invest in FTTP? And the point I think needed to stress, going back a little bit to my response to an earlier question, when we look at investment in sport content, it is for typically a 3-year period. We are looking at the direct revenues and margins that flow from that investment. They are in the retail business. They are in our sport business through multiple distribution channels. They're in our broadband base. If we don't have the content, then typically those revenues move down pretty swiftly because we know exactly what is attributable to the sport. So there isn't a solution whereby somehow one doesn't invest in sport and all of that cash is suddenly available to invest in network. It would be the net left over after the loss of revenues associated with the sport, and that would be make a very small contribution. So it's really not a trade-off that we is a real one.
Paul, I agree. That's a much better answer than mine. So I think we're sort of running out of time a little bit, but I'm conscious it seems like we've got more questions. So maybe we take a couple more.
Okay, so your next question comes from Maurice Patrick from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, guys. It's Maurice here. I'll just stick to one, if that's all right. So just on towers, thanks for your earlier clarifications. But just to understand how many towers you actually have, if I'm not wrong, is it 14,500 or so in MBNL, of which you're economic stake is 50% of that JV, and there are extra towers outside that but you don't own any or most of them. Just clarifying how many towers and your economic exposure would be super helpful, just also in context of yesterday seeming to want to create a tower code themselves which includes their stake in that JV, so it'd be very helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Simon, do you want to just confirm how many towers we've got?
Well, I mean, I think the indication that was provided before, if we look at MBNL in total, if we look in total in the UK, we've got high teens, so in the sort of 18 to 19 sort of range, the vast majority...
Thousand.
indeed, thousand. The vast majority of those are within MBNL. There are a set of unilateral sort of BT sites. They're a relatively small proportion of those. I think the number of 3,000 was mentioned earlier. That's a shade low. It's probably another 1,500 or so up beyond that. So that's the current portfolio today.
Great. Thanks, Maurice. We've got time for another question, maybe?
Thank you. So the next question is from John Carradice from Numis. Please go ahead.
Hi, John.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for taking the question. I wonder, Philip, if you can spend a minute or two being a little bit more direct and explicit about looking after your shareholders, please, because as you can see, BT still trades at a massive discount to a sector which is itself out of favor. And it seems like investors are simply not persuaded that cutting the dividend is a good idea, even if you do have the potential to earn a good return on extra fiber capex. Some would say that you haven't got a choice given all the announcements of the alternative operators and what they're planning to do. So what are your thoughts on this? And also, you've given us and you keep giving us four potential sources of funds for this extra capex, but you haven't said which of these is more likely and which of these is less likely. Is it possible for you to do that now, please? And overall, what extra can you, as a chief executive, as a chairman, as a management team, can say or do to resuscitate this share price? Thank you.
Yeah, John, look, really appreciate the question, and I understand the sentiment behind it. So first thing to say, look, you know, what we're focused on is long-term sustainable results and returns for shareholders. That is what ultimately we're trying to do. And I recognize right now there is a lot of uncertainty around BT and the kind of returns that we could be expected to make and what kind of investments will be required. There are lots of moving parts, lots of uncertainty, and we've talked about most of them today, whether it be FTTP, for example, on one hand, or Huawei on the other hand, or indeed some more straightforward, more normal things like what kind of returns you're going to get on 5G and the implications of spectrum and all those things that are coming. So I recognize completely for many shareholders there's a lot of uncertainty hanging over the company. What we are aiming to do is to try and sort through that uncertainty, wade through it, and try and make some decisions and get help from other stakeholders who are crucial to us, Ofcom, government, as an example. Such that we feel confident that in what we decide to do when those factors are a bit clearer, makes economic sense and serves all stakeholders. And that, of course, at the top of the list means shareholders. So that's all I can really say to you in terms of what we are aiming to do. I know that might be slightly disappointing, but there is no other shortcut to give people confidence today in the very, very short-term decisions, because there's too much uncertainty. So I'm really sorry, John. I know it's a difficult topic. I know it's very frustrating. It's frustrating for us too. Having said all that, do I feel like it's possible that we could get these kind of uncertainties and decisions resolved in the foreseeable future? I absolutely do. And what you've got here sitting around this table is a team of people who are absolutely dedicated to delivering that, supported by the board, and you've got 100,000 people out on the streets every single day delivering for customers, in the end, to try and make a fair return for the overall company, which of course includes shareholders. So John, do you want to give a follow-up question to that? Because I know it may not be the answer you wanted to hear.
Yeah, you're dead right, Philip. It wasn't, but thank you. I just wanted to say a couple of things. The first one is, do you really feel that you actually have a choice of to walk away if you don't get the enablers, given what all the other alternative operators are planning? So you present this as if you do have a choice, but I would suggest that the share price implies that you haven't. So that's the first point. The second point is, please, based on your internal plans, do you think that a dividend cut is more likely, more probable, versus for the other sources of funding that you've talked about? Try and give, if possible, some sort of probability on these four sources of extra funding that you've talked about.
Okay. Now, John, appreciate the follow-up question. I mean, again, what I say to that is you've always got choices. So we absolutely have choices. I think what's fair to say is the best-case scenario, which I'm shooting for, is a very ambitious plan, which is the converged network plan you know about, with a massively bold plan around FTTP and 5G and great converged products sitting on that. If we go down that path, I'm absolutely certain that shareholders will do very nicely as a result of that, and so they should, because we're taking the risk on investing. So the next option down, and then there's a whole variation to those, may be suboptimal, but they're still choices, and they still could be good. But, of course, there are scenarios, and that's why we are where we are, where none of those things gets resolved, so the choices become not that appealing. In those situations, we will take decisions in the way I described to get the best outcome for all stakeholders, particularly shareholders. And again, I really appreciate it. I don't want you to think I'm dodging your question. And you say, please help me on the dividend question. I can't help you today because there's so much uncertainty. All I can say to you is we've been very clear on the four places we could use and get money for any investment we may require. Think carefully. We would only make that investment if we think the returns are appropriate and very, very attractive. If we're in a situation where we have that, I will have no hesitation in taking from all of those four buckets, including the dividend, and I know the board will support us doing that. And so should good long-term shareholders. So look, I hope that's I hope it's given another chance, John, to try and give you a better flavour for what I'm thinking. Again, I apologise if it hasn't dealt with everything you want. I think we're going to have to close it off at that point. It's been an hour and 15 minutes. Thank you so much for your interest and questions. That's really helpful, and look forward to engaging with you over the next few months.